On the eve of the World Cup, we have a packed show for you on The People's Game, Pacifica Radio's 2010 World Cup Soccer Show. In a moment, we'll go straight to the scene of the excitement, South Africa, and talk to ETV's Zain Nabi, and he'll give us the lowdown on Bafana Bafana, the South African men's soccer team. Then we'll talk to their rivals tomorrow, Mexico, as we'll speak to Gustavo Arellano, author of Ask a Mexican, and his radio producer as well, Fernando Romero. Then we'll look at the second matchup tomorrow, Uruguay-France. We will talk to Lazar Treshan, Uruguayan fan who blogs on nomoreonionbags.com. And then we'll be joined by Laurent Dubois, author of Soccer Empire, The World Cup and the Future of France. And lastly, tying it all together, Nick Green, who blogs on 100% Soccer. We're focusing in on the first day of the World Cup tournament. The world is on the edge of its seat, its eyes fixed on South Africa. Let the games begin. Now it's time to focus on one of the big mysteries for soccer fans around the world right now, the South African national team itself. After all, they're the one team in the World Cup tournament that didn't have to go through the rigorous trials of qualification. Bafana Bafana, as the South African national team is known, face Mexico in the opening match of the tournament tomorrow. And it is a huge match for both sides if they aspire to move on to the second round. So we have with us Zain Nabi. He is a sports journalist at ETV South Africa. ETV is the only African independent 24-hour news channel, and Zain Nabi was awarded the Sports Journalist of the Year for the KwaZulu-Natal region in 2009. And Zain Nabi, welcome to Pacifica Radio's The People's Game.
Alan, thanks for having me. It certainly is a pleasure to join you on the eve of what's one of the most exciting tournaments and one of the most exciting times in South Africa.
Indeed. In preparing this show, so much excitement to talk about the games on the field, to talk about everything going on around a World Cup. And I don't know that the excitement ever is as great as what we go through right now. All the soccer fans around the world, everything is in front of us. It's all anticipation. I can only imagine what it must be like to be in the host country right now, to be from the host country. So what's the general sense? How would you describe the level of anticipation? It must be at fever pitch.
Well, Alan, very difficult to put into words, and I've been blessed to live in a country where I've seen a Rugby World Cup. I'm sure the American audience and the global audience would have seen Invictus, directed by Clint Eastwood. I've been around for a Cricket World Cup in South Africa, but nothing quite come and describe the feeling of patriotism, the feeling of excitement that the World Cup has brought to South Africa. The Mundial certainly is something that has united South Africans. I just look outside my own house. We've got three South African flags waving, and that's something that's not normal in my family. You drive around the streets, you see this, you see flags are up, you see there's a lot of signage, you see people have flags on their car, and there certainly is this outpouring of patriotism as people are really, really excited about the event. You know, it almost feels like you're sitting here on Christmas Eve, and you're waiting to open your present, and we certainly hope South Africa, in the form of our national team, Bafana Bafana, can deliver a real stellar performance against a very competent and formidable Mexican outfit at Soccer City.
And before we get into the details of Bafana Bafana themselves, the South African team, how deflated would people be, not only if the team doesn't make the second round, but even if they were, say, to lose tomorrow?
People know realistically that they hope and they pray that Bafana will do well. And what's really got the confidence of the public up is that Bafana Bafana has not been defeated in their last 12 outings. Their most recent win came over Denmark, and about two or three days before that, they beat Colombia 2-1. And both those teams are ranked in the top 40 nations in the world. Of course, Denmark will be at the World Cup, having qualified. So that has really buoyed a lot of confidence and got a lot of people hopeful that Bafana can do well. But yes, I think the reality is, out there, when we take the rose-tinted glasses off, when we look purely at form, Bafana haven't performed in recent years. I think the world out there doesn't expect much from Bafana Bafana, but we take hope from the fact that in 1995, there was a team captained by Francois Pienaar and coached by Chris Christie, They weren't favourites going into the 1995 World Cup, but they certainly played with a lot of pride, and they ended up winning the tournament. Now, you'd be hard-pressed to find a South African who'd actually back Bafana to win the tournament, but I think our national team are going to do us proud, and we're certainly hopeful that at least the team can get out of the round-robin stages and into the last 16.
Let's look then at the details of this squad. The one player that I have been very impressed with over recent years is Steven Pienaar, who plays for Everton. He is a midfielder. How central is he to this South African squad?
You know, I was just chatting to Neil Tovey, a former South African captain, and Clive Barker, a former South African coach, and they are the only coach and captain who have won in 1996 the African Cup of Nations, which is our major continental showpiece title. And when I asked them who will be central to Bafana Bafana, they said that it's Steven Pienaar who's going to bring that attacking edge. Steven was player of the season at Everton this year. He certainly is a real catalyst in the midfield in creating goals and really carries, I'd say, the hope of the nations. He's incredibly skillful, came from Cape Town, went through the school of excellence there before he was spotted and went overseas via Ajax, and of course ending up at Everton. He's a skillful player. A lot of the attacking flair will come from him. And he's certainly going to be one of the players to watch at the World Cup. I think he's got the experience not to get stage fright in the scale of a tournament like the World Cup. And I think he's going to be a real, real, real factor in the Bafana team and someone who's going to be relied on to control the game.
Now, the thing that's been spoken about that I've seen as a weakness is the matter of who can put the ball in the net up front for South Africa. A lot has been...
Absolutely. I mean, they're offering 1 million rand a goal for the national team. That'll tell you how dire the situation is. Look, the reality is we have battled for a striker up front. Benny McCarthy, who didn't make the World Cup squad, is the top goal scorer for South Africa. And the reality is we tend to create opportunities, but we don't score. And this comes back to the formation that Carlos Alberto Pereira will play.
Right.
It's likely that he'll select two defensive midfielders, with Kagiso de Gacho as one of those holding midfielders, play one striker up front with Kagiso Mpela, and rely on Steven with his left boot to create a lot of attack coming up the left-hand side. The reality is Bafana haven't scored many goals, and most of their friendlies, they've scored from the spot with a lot of penalty kicks. But I think what Carlos has brought to the Bafana team is a good pattern. The team know how they want to play, defensively very sound, and will look to basically strike on their counter-attack with limited opportunities. Hopefully the fact that there's 1 million rand on offer for every goal will act as an incentive for the likes of Katleko Mpela, who's played very well for a local team, Sundowns, which is owned by Africa's first and only billionaire, Patrice Motsepe, while the other marksman up front who could play off the bench is Bernard Parker, who plays for FC Twente in Holland, and they actually won the league there. So he's been in pretty good form, playing off the bench for them. And, of course, the veteran striker in the squad, Siyabonga Nomvete, who went to the World Cup in Korea and Japan in 2002. Of course, a lot will rely, as we pretty much agree with Steven, creating. But it's up to those three men, whoever's on the field, to put it in the back of the net.
It's amazing to think that you have to put a million quid, as it were, down, because if they are to score tomorrow, whoever scores will own the world for 2 minutes. I mean, it would be...
I think it really shows that the South African Football Association is trying to put as many financial incentives ahead of Bafana Bafana to get them through. We all know they had a fantastic run in the Confed Cup last year. They beat New Zealand, they drew with Iran, and they lost to Spain in the league stages. They then went through to the quarters where they lost to Brazil, and, of course, lost to Spain in the third-place playoff, where they played some pretty good football.
Right.
Where it took Brazil, I think, up until the 84th minute to win in that semi when they won 1-0. And, of course, Spain only won the third and fourth-place playoff 3-2 in extra time. So I think that really goes to show what playing at home soil will do for you. And let's not forget about the magical Vuvuzela, which is going to be blown by the 13th man, all those South African supporters.
Mexico has some great young players up front. Carlos Vela, who plays with Arsenal. Javier Hernandez, who just signed with Manchester United. Mm-hmm. And they've been very impressive in holding the ball, becoming very coherent these past few weeks. A little bit of anxiety, though, right in front of the goal. I understand South Africa has a very strong goaltender.
Well, in Itumeleng Nkune, he's been in very good form for Bafana Bafana. He was injured in two friendly games ago, and his understudy, Muneeb Josephs, was in goal, and he played pretty well, saving a penalty against Colombia. So I think Itumeleng Nkune, a lot weighs on his shoulders. He's been one of the more experienced Bafana Bafana goalkeepers. He plays for Soweto Giants, Kaizer Chiefs, and a lot will be expected from him. Of course, you know, Bafana have played well in their friendlies, but let's be honest, Mexico are 17th in the world, and players like Javier Hernandez, who I think at 21 has been signed at Manchester, and Sir Alex Ferguson has been really, really waxing lyrical about him.
Right.
And Carlos Vela, of course, used to playing in the Premiership and, of course, in Europe with Arsenal, are certainly going to provide him with more than enough of a test. We know, I was just, you know, reading the comments from Coach Javier Aguirre, and he said they're not intimidated about playing at Soccer City. They're not coming there to make friends. They're not coming there to be popular. They're coming there to win. And, of course, I think we all remember that he was part of the Mexican team that made the quarterfinals in 1986 when the tournament was hosted in Mexico. So he knows what it's like in a World Cup environment. And he certainly got the talent, I mean, looking at that 2-1 victory over Italy, to go forward and really put a good run together in Africa.
Yeah, the sense here in the region of Mexican soccer fandom, which is where we're in that region here in Southern mm-hmm. California, the sense is that the team is really coalescing and playing some very nice soccer, controlling the ball at midfield. Now, they don't have much of an aerial game. A central defender for South Africa is 6'6", right, Matthew Booth. How vulnerable is the South African central defense to a team that plays very well low to the ground like Mexico?
Well, look, it's debatable whether Matthew Booth will start. It's clear that someone like Aaron Mokoena, who played at Portsmouth in the English Premiership and is a South African captain, will be there marshalling the troops. And there's a lot of talk about a local South African player, Tandiyiso Koboni, who's a midfielder, actually slotting in next to him to play in defence. Matthew Booth, I find, is pretty good, a pretty reasonable player in the South African Premiership. But the reality is he's very clumsy when he has to turn. And quick plays like Javier Hernandez and Carlos Vela, I think, will actually make him look like a Mickey Mouse out there.
Oh yeah, Vela would run circles around him.
To be brutally honest, as well as Bafana are with their defense, I think it's going to rely a lot on Aaron, his leadership. At times, we know that he suffers from brain explosions as well, but he's the best man we have. Unfortunately, South Africa's premier defender, Nassif Morris, hasn't been selected in the 23-man squad. There's been a lot of speculation about his rift with Bafana assistant coach Pitso Matsumane. And for those who don't know Nassif Morris, he plays for Racing Santander in the Spanish La Liga. He plays consistently for them and obviously plays against top internationals on a weekly basis, obviously when La Liga is running. So it was a shock that he didn't make the squad, and it's basically left Aaron as sort of the linchpin in defense.
Well, it's going to be very exciting. Your thoughts, any sense of how this game may go?
Look, the Heart obviously wants Bafana to do well. They've been on a great run, 12 games undefeated. They've built up ahead of steam. I think it's going to be interesting to see how the referee refs the game. His name doesn't come to mind, but he's a young man from Uzbekistan. If I'm correct, 37, and he's going to be the youngest referee ever to blow a game at the World Cup. So it's going to be interesting to see how he handles the nerves. Will the pressure of a hometown result in a few hometown calls? We'll wait for that to be seen. But Bafana, very organized, very confident. Carlos Alberto Pereira, certainly worth his $1.3 million salary a month. We all know what he's done at Brazil as a coach. Very organized. Obviously, Steven's going to be the linchpin in the Bafana midfield, looking to create a few chances. And I think Bafana can sneak it with 1-0. They are defensively very sound. I think it's gonna have to depend on the defense with the likes of Aaron Mokoena, Sangweni, Gaka, actually closing down Vela and Hernandez. I think Hernandez is obviously the key man in the Mexican team. Certainly is a deadly marksman in front of goal. And, you know, I think Mexico will be buoyed with their captain, Rafael Marquez, who, if I'm correct, is likely to be fit for the game tomorrow and should be there with all his experience having played at Barcelona. I think a very close game, but in the end, Bafana, lifted by close to 100,000 supporters in Soccer City, with the Vuvuzelas blowing and with patriotism coursing through their blood, I think they'll sneak it 1-0 in the opening game.
Zane Nabi from ETV in South Africa, thank you so much for joining us here on The People's Game, and we'll talk to you later in the tournament, and just enjoy the next 24 hours.
It's a pleasure, and thank you for having me. And certainly, I think we're going to see a cracking game tomorrow. I really think Mexico have the talent to go through in this tournament. And perhaps it'll be France who'll be making the early exit come the end of the round-robin stages.
It's a very intriguing group itself. Of course, Uruguay, the fourth team. We'll be talking to you here on the People's Game. Thank you, Zain Nabi.
Cool. You take care, Alan. Cheers.
So there we have the perspective from down in South Africa. On tomorrow's opening match, the whole world will be watching South Africa versus Mexico. Now we're going to bring it a little closer back to home and ask a Mexican. Notably, Gustavo Arellano, author of Ask a Mexican. So, Gustavo, who do you think is going to take the match tomorrow?
It's going to be a really tough game. It's with talent, Mexico supremely overdoes the South African side. The South African side, God bless their souls, but they're really running with the hopes of millions there. But that's all they have. And that might be the advantage that South Africa has. It's the inaugural game in this World Cup. It's going to be in South Africa. You're going to have hundreds of thousands of people around the stadium and millions cheering on the South African side. And the Mexican side is a very young side, so they might get spooked. They're not going to be in Estadio Azteca anymore. They're going to be in South Africa.
The words of Don Quixote, and now over to Sancho Panza. We have Fernando Romero, producer for Gustavo Arellano's show. What do you make of the Mexican side? What are the details of this squad? They are young. The core comes from a team in 2005 that won the Youth World Cup. What's it look like?
I think,
right now?
Like Gustavo just mentioned, it's going to be a really close game. It's going to be a 1-0, 2-0 game. I honestly, I believe Mexico will pull it out. I know that hundreds of millions of people are going to be watching, tuning in, rooting for South Africa because nobody wants South Africa to lose and be outed in the first round. I know that the team that they fielded against Italy a couple of days ago was a compilation of like young players and very experienced players. I know that Coach Javier Aguirre was heavily criticized by the Mexican press for calling up Oscar Perez, whom hadn't been called up in years, and he called him up specifically because of the experience, specifically because he was the main goalkeeper in 2002. And looking at the team that they fielded against Italy, they had like it was a mix of youth and experience. They had, you know, Blanco, they had Perez, they had Marquez, but they also had four players from the 2005 team that won the World Cup, under 17 World Cup, such as Vela, Juarez, Dos Santos, all these guys. So I think in regards to playing against South Africa and playing against the host team, that experience mixed with that youthful characters will definitely help Mexico win, because a lot of times when you play the World Cup, the home team has at least two-thirds a goal just being the home team. But I think with Mexico's talent, their youth, and their experience, they'll definitely prevail.
And where are you watching the match tomorrow, Fernando?
I am going to be at home. We'll be having a barbecue around 6 in the morning. We're going to wake up the neighbors, and if anybody complains, well, get used to it, because it's going to be going for at least 30 days.
And yourself, Gustavo?
I'm also going to be watching it at home with my copy of the New York Times and about 3 or 4 quesadillas cooking on the stove. I might try to get some of my friends over, but they're working class stiffs, literally. They're all going to be at work at that point. But I'm sure they're going to hear it on the radio. For the other matches, I'm going to go, you know, wherever the Mexicans are. Now, I'm in Santana, so they're everywhere.
Yeah, there's a big public screening in Linwood at the Plaza de Mexico in Linwood. And Gustavo, obviously you're one of the leading commentators on the region we're here in Southern California. What does the Mexican national team, soccer team, mean to Mexican Americans?
Everything. For Mexican Americans, they also, that's their team, like the Raiders, like the Lakers, like the Dodgers. You might have a couple of people here and there cheering on the American side, but they're all cheering for the Mexican side. Because, you know, the Mexican soccer team, El Tri, you want to talk about one of the sports teams in the world that is most tied into a specific regional character, you have El Tri. I mean, they call themselves after the Mexican flag. They have the colors of red, white, and green right there emblazoned on them. They represent the hopes of millions upon millions of people. And so, you know, nothing against South Africans. God bless you guys, and good luck with the rest of the cup. But Mexicans they're trying to will their team to win the cup, because that's the only way possible that we can really show the rest of the world that we're not the alien drug-running culture that the American press, and that's the only way the rest of the world knows this, via the American press. So if we have a successful team in the cup, that gives the positive side of Mexico that people never really want to see.
You know what's so funny is in 2006 against Argentina, they played a really classic match, and they played a truly beautiful match. And when the Mexican team clicks, they can really play beautiful soccer. And some of the top teams, especially Brazil this tournament, are actually not really relying on beautiful soccer, but are bringing in some of the negative tactics to sort of more ensure victories as opposed to playing beautifully. So I think this team, if they put on a great performance, they can really turn a lot of heads tomorrow, because, of course, the opening game against the home team, first World Cup match ever in Africa, the whole world will be watching. Fernando, I know, is a great fan of global soccer and really has a great sense of the quality of play. Now, these two players up front, Vela and Hernandez, the whole world will be watching. Vela's with Arsenal in England. Hernandez has been signed by Manchester United. Great players, no?
Vela and Hernandez. I think Hernandez, I would really like to see him start during the World Cup just because he did sign for Manchester United, and I'm assuming Alex Ferguson's going to be just looking to see this guy, see what he can do. And I really hope that Hernandez and Bofell can click, because when you have two players playing for Arsenal and one for Manchester United, it turns everything around. And obviously you have other players from Mexico playing in some of the top leagues in Europe, in Holland, Spain. We have Dos Santos playing in Turkey. So the talent that Mexico has, they do employ a lot of the beautiful game, but also with Aguirre, a very experienced coach, the tactical is just down to the bone, so they're definitely set.
As always, it seems with Mexico, quite a paradox. Here they have an opportunity to show one of the really prettier playing sides in the tournament to the whole world, and yet the whole world is rooting against them tomorrow. Mm. And everybody wants to see, except for the diehard supporters of Mexico, concentrated in the very region we're in right now. People want to see this stadium lift off the ground and elevate to the sky, because that one goal by South Africa and the place will just go bonkers.
I'm sure if Mexico wins, the know-nothings here in the United States will blame, we'll somehow tie it into the Reconquista. We'll somehow do something to malign us. Instead of celebrating Mexico for doing good in the tournament, they're going to say, oh, typical Mexicans had to ruin the goodwill of the world by beating South Africa in the inaugural match. It's going to be a tough match. I'm rooting for Mexico all the way, but if South Africa wins, I would rather Mexico lose to no other country in the world except South Africa, and only in this game. Only this game. The rest of the way, of course, with Mexico, you can never underestimate us. People always try to look down on Mexico and spit on them, but we always come back again and again, and we always surprise, and we surprise really good.
Thank you so much for joining us here again. Sancho Panza, Don Quixote, Fernando Romero, producer of the 3 o'clock Report with Gustavo Arellano, and Gustavo Arellano, author of Orange County and Ask a Mexican. Enjoy tomorrow's game.
Gracias.
Thank you.
And the World Cup, as we all know, starts tomorrow. What much of Southern California may not be aware of is that there'll be another match besides Mexico and South Africa tomorrow. And it is in the same group, Group A, and it's between Uruguay and France. It is a huge match, of course, for both clubs. France are the prohibitive favorites within the group, though there's some speculation that they are vulnerable. And Uruguay is somewhat sliding beneath the radar screen for many people, because it's a group that has France in it and the home side. And, of course, here in Southern California, everyone's thinking about Mexico. Uruguay, a small country in South America with one of the greatest soccer traditions. To talk about the Uruguayan side, I have brought on a diehard Uruguayan fan, Lazar Trejan, who is a blogger. He is of Uruguayan descent, and his blog is called NoMoreOnionBags.com. It is a soccer blog. And welcome to the People's Game, Lazar.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
First of all, before we talk about this year's Uruguayan soccer team, let's talk a little bit about soccer in Uruguay, Uruguayan culture. There have only been 7 countries that have won World Cups, and Uruguay's won 2 of them, the first one ever in 1930, and perhaps the greatest upset ever in the finals when Uruguay won at Brazil in 1950. So Uruguay in soccer, what's its place within Uruguayan society and culture, and what do those World Cup victories mean?
The World Cup victories, particularly in 1950, sort of put Uruguay on the map. The one in 1930 was in Uruguay, and Uruguay was known as the best country in the world. But the victory in 1950, which was, like you said, in Brazil in front of 200,000 Brazilians in the Maracana Stadium, Uruguay actually came back from a goal down to win 2-1. Brazil actually, because of the way it was structured then, could have won the title with just a tie. Uruguay had to win, gave sort of Uruguay an incredible sort of surge of national pride and really a sense of self-identity. Uruguay went on to become one of the, you know, per capita income strongest countries in South America, one of the strongest democracies for a long time in South America, known as the Switzerland of South America. You know, a lot of people say that the World Cup victory really had a lot to do with establishing that national pride and really helping the country along. And, you know, you still see it historically, people talking about that as a real point of pride. A quick anecdote: my father, when he first left Uruguay in the late 60s, took a boat from Uruguay to Israel, and that ship actually did a quick stop in Rio, so everyone could get off the boat, go to the stadium, kiss the ground, get back on the boat, and go to Israel.
Sacred ground for Uruguayans. The stadium in Brazil where the Uruguay defeated Brazil is actually a name that is evokes despair among Brazilians.
Every time Uruguay plays Brazil, and they probably play once or twice a year for the past 60 years since that game, it's always revenge match on the front page of, you know, O Globo or whatever a Brazilian newspaper. And the cover of the Uruguayan newspaper will always talk about, you know, reliving the Maracanazo, the time we won in the Maracana. I was in Rio for one of the first times this year in January, and I went to a game at the Maracana, and a little small club game. And as soon as I passed through the entry gates, I raised my hands and screamed, you know, Uruguay champion 1950, and all the Brazilian security guards started cracking up because, you know, they know, you know, it's still a little thing we have stuck in with them.
It was in Brazil, if you can imagine, the Brazilian soccer tradition, even as of 1950, the team reaches the finals. The expectation of victory was so overwhelming. I think it pretty much is one of the largest soccer crowds in the history of the game, 200,000 people in the stadium that was built for the tournament, and Uruguay comes basically back from two goals down to win. The whole country of Brazil went catapulting into total despair.
That's why, you know, every time they still play, it's still a revenge match. They've beaten us probably, you know, 80 out of the last 100 games since then, but they still don't feel like they've gotten their revenge. So they get to take it out on us a couple times a year, but you know, we still have that.
To focus on the Uruguayan men's soccer team 2010 edition, it seems a little bit of a paradox. Since those great World Cup victories, and even going back to those teams, Uruguay has been known for its fantastically well-organized and solid defense. But this year's team, the thing that's really noticeable about it, is an incredible, potent striking force up front in Diego Forlán and Luis Suárez.
Yeah, I'd have to say, even trying to look objectively, we probably have the best strike pair in the World Cup. The best pair of strikers. I mean, Diego Forlán has been golden boot, meaning he scored the most goals in Europe twice in the past 5 years for Atletico Madrid and Villarreal in Spain. And Luis Suárez this year in the Dutch league alone scored 35 goals, I think, in total games for Ajax in all competitions. He had 47 goals in 48 games. I mean, those are really absurd numbers, as the British say. You know, he scores for fun. So, you know, up front, you know, we have the ability to take, if we can just get a few chances, we have the ability to convert.
Why, then, is this team not more heralded? Uruguay, known as La Celeste in references to their national uniforms, team is not considered as strong as you would think given the power up front. And again, paradoxically, given Uruguayan football history, are they just weak in the back and not so solid in midfield? What are the weaknesses that once you have these great strikers up front, yet they're not really considered a threat to go very deep in the tournament?
Well, the link between sort of midfield, defense, and attack is not the strength. The last time Uruguay had a really good team, which was sort of the mid-'80s to the mid-'90s, we got to the second round of the 1990 World Cup behind two great, you know, playmaker/forwards in Enzo Francescoli and Ruben Sosa, who played many successful years in Europe. You know, we had great number 10s, that what we call in Uruguay the enganche, the link between midfield and the forward line. And right now, the past few years, we really haven't had a great enganche. The person we're going to be playing now is named Nacho Gonzalez, who plays in Greece right now, who is a number 10. He's a bit on the slow side, but he hasn't had a lot of success outside of Uruguay. So that link is the problem. We do have a couple of good central defenders, but our wingbacks are a little unheralded, and the rest of our midfield is not so great. Our perhaps best midfielder, Cristian Rodriguez, didn't get taken to the World Cup because, you know, he couldn't control his temper in a match against Argentina and fought with Gabby Heinze in the tunnel and got suspended for the first two games of the World Cup. So, you know, given that you may only play three games in the World Cup, we couldn't give him a spot since he wouldn't be able to play the first two.
Now, that is part of a more recent post-1950 Uruguayan World Cup history, is some extremely aggressive play from the Uruguayan side. My understanding is that's not really such an issue with this side this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's become a stereotype. I mean, it certainly was true in the 70s and in the early 80s before Francescoli, but when Uruguay would hack teams to bits if they couldn't play with them. It's not as true now, but, you know, we still have that, sadly, that reputation. Although in qualifying, while we did have some yellow cards, if you look at all of our friendlies, like our most recent friendly win over Switzerland, you know, they had five yellow cards and we had none. But, you know, still Uruguay always gets tipped to win the yellow card, red card total. But this team is much more attacking and progressive and forward-thinking and really based on trying to score goals.
Now, the opponent in the first match is, of course, France. They won the tournament in 98. They got to the finals in 2006. In between there in 2002, something quite different. They went out of the tournament as the defending European and world champions without scoring a single goal in the tournament. So maybe every other World Cup, they're just rotten. But then again, they're very aware of getting off to bad starts. They probably want to get off to a much stronger start in this World Cup. What's your anticipation for this first match?
You know, France has the big stars. It's hard to argue with your, you know, Ribéry's and Anelka's and Malouda's and Gourcuff and Gallus and those types. But what they don't have is team chemistry. There are a lot of, you know, highly paid superstars who have long rivalries, both at club level and from growing up together. So there are a lot of different battles. The coach, you know, is sort of a, you know, behind Maradona, perhaps the most erratic of the coaches in the World Cup.
It depends what's in the stars is how he makes some of his decisions, right?
Yeah, and I think he proposed to this woman after losing, getting eliminated from the last European Championships. He proposed on national television to a TV presenter woman while being interviewed by her, and she didn't say yes. It was, like, quite awkward and perhaps not the most appropriate place for that to happen.
He didn't read his astrology well.
Exactly. So, you know, on paper, France has a great team and should beat anyone. But when you watch France play, it's really not very inspiring stuff.
Yeah, and the central defense, again, these are all global superstars, Sagna, Gallus, Abidal, Evra. Can they contain Forlan and Suarez? The talent is there to play, you know, tight professional football. But do you think, again, given their non-coordination, the great strike force of Uruguay can break through?
You know, what we're just going to have to hope is that we get a couple chances and that we've got great strikers. So great strikers don't need five chances to put one in. Great strikers should put, you know, every other chance they get in. So maybe we won't get as many chances and break through as much, but we're just going to have to hope that the times we do, we'll be able to take advantage.
And then in terms of containing France's attack, I mean, Malouda's fantastic, Anelka's fantastic, but on his good days, Ribéry is divine. Can the Uruguayan defense contain Ribéry?
Yeah, the team has sort of been set up to control him. We have a right winger who's really going to function as an extra defender. So, because Ribéry, even though he's right-footed, plays on the left side, you know, we really need to be concerned about him. And again, he's a great player, but he does tend to sometimes run hot and cold. So, if we can frustrate them early, maybe break up some of their game early on, they do have a slight tendency to get a little bit petulant and maybe stop working together. And this Uruguayan team, unlike the one in 2002, does have a great togetherness.
In past years, Uruguay on the pitch, first day of the tournament, globally the expectation wouldn't be for a great, exciting match. But this is setting up, again, with the French talent, the great strike force in Uruguay, like an incredibly dynamic match. It's on later in the day after Mexico, South Africa. Will you offer a prediction?
I'm going to hope for a 1-1 draw and then wins against South Africa and but against Mexico later on. But I think we can do 1-1.
It's been great talking with you, LeVar Trechon, who is writes for NoMoreOnionBags.com. Thank you so much for joining us here, Lazar.
My pleasure.
So there you have the lowdown on the Uruguayan team. And now on to their much higher-profile opponents tomorrow, France. We spoke with Laurent Dubois, author of the brand new book, Soccer Empire, The World Cup and the Future of France. Laurent Dubois is also a professor at Duke University who this past year taught a course entitled World Cup and World Politics. My co-host, Jennifer Doyle, and I spoke with Laurent Dubois for over 45 minutes. The entirety of that interview will soon be uploaded to the website for this show, www.thepeoplesgame.org. This is just a tiny excerpt from that interview in which we asked Laurent Dubois about this year's French men's national soccer team.
I mean, well, the French side is, you know, is really interesting. In some ways, there's a continuity with 2006 in that there's still this core of Caribbean players and some new players who weren't there. I mean, and that's one of the things I emphasize in the book, that basically 9 of the 23 players were either born in or had roots in Guadeloupe, Martinique, and French Guiana. And a lot of those players, Malouda, Galas, Abidal, Henri, are still there. And then Gaël Clichy and Anelka, also of Martinican background, are there. So there's that interesting side. Then there's, of course, a number of players who are the children of African immigrants to France, Sanya, Evra, and several others. And then, interestingly, there's actually no North African players on the team. So Benzema and Nasri, who were hopefuls, are not there. And so that's a kind of intriguing thing. It's sort of in fact, there weren't ever that many of those players in recent history. I mean, Zidane was a kind of unique one, but of course a very important one. And in a way, you know, it's this team. I think in some ways it's a continuity that we've seen before. It's a team of incredibly talented players that has not gelled. You know, and obviously the coach is beleaguered and maybe justifiably so. You know, sort of just seen as a big problem. At the same time, and Zidane just said this in an interview I saw recently, and Thuram emphasized this when he was here, you know, people asked him about the coach, and he said, you know, honestly, when you're this kind of, you know, when you're at our level of play and you go to the World Cup, you don't really play for the coach anymore. You know, the question is the team going to be able to figure it out on the field and create a kind of dynamic? If they can, they've obviously got the talent to do very well. If they don't, you know, they could just drop out almost in the first round, you know, which is what happened in 2002. So it's really possible for it to go either way. And the question is there going to be kind of leadership on the field and who's going to take it? I mean, obviously Henri is a good candidate, Ribéry, Evra perhaps. So if they can, and you know, I remember watching in 2006, you could really see the team coalesce. In the group stages of 2006, the team really didn't do very well.
Right.
And I remember you just watch these little conferences that were like Makalele, Zidane, and Thuram. I've got a picture of one of these early in the book. They were talking on the field, and they had to figure it out, and they kind of then sort of directed some of the younger players. And so, I mean, these are obviously really incredible professionals, and they've got a lot of experience among them. So we'll see. You know, I mean, I'm going to root for France because I've got to, and you kind of stay loyal in some ways. And I do still, you know, have some hope for the team, although obviously I'm going to be torn when they play South Africa because I think I also really would love to see South Africa progress and do well.
Yeah, it's a tricky group. In fact, all four sides in that group, there's reason for me, and I, unlike Jennifer and yourself, I'm not a partisan of the French side traditionally, but all four teams really merit affection from my point of view. Of course, Mexico is far and away the most popular side in the region where Jennifer and I are at in Southern California. Uruguay, of course, is a very small country that sees itself as having sort of invented modern soccer in some respects. And then
South Africa, it's
the host country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, France, certainly there's very mature players that make up the side. I do expect the play to run through Ribéry. Are you expecting that?
I think so. I mean, I think he's really crucial, and that could be really crucial. And I think if he can hold up, Anelka is, you know, very varied, you know, in his play. But when he's at his best, he's just totally brilliant.
And sure.
But then there's these players. I mean, Sanya is such a core of that team and just so cool and collected and calm and just sort of unflappable, and that's pretty important. So there's, I think, all those kinds of players will play different kinds of roles.
And Malouda was just on fire for Chelsea at certain points this year. So that, you know, again, within the group, I do think France has the most individual talent, certainly. And I suppose I'm expecting them to pass through the group. Alan Minsky, co-host of The People's Game here on Pacifica Radio, and I'm joined now by one of the designated co-hosts of this project, Nick Green. Nick Green is a journalist with The Daily Breeze here in Southern California, and he blogs at 100% Soccer. Nick Green, welcome to The People's Game.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, we are on the eve of the World Cup. You are a lifelong football fan. I know that all I have to do right now is think it starts tomorrow and I'm having a happy day. What's it feel like for you?
Yes, I'm ridiculously excited, Alan. it's weird because 4 years ago I was going to Germany and I don't think I was this excited. I think what's making me very excited this time is that this is my first World Cup in Southern California. Korea didn't count because that was in the middle of the night. 4 years ago I was in Germany, and before that I did not live in Los Angeles. So I'm really looking forward just to plunging into the cultural milieu of this very cosmopolitan metropolis. I'm planning to go all over the city and drink in various viewing parties, of which there's more than I've ever seen before for a World Cup in this country. So I think the country is getting excited about it as well.
Well, for those people who are listening around the world or elsewhere in the nation who are not aware of it, New York City is probably the only metropolitan area in the world that rivals Los Angeles for ethnic diversity and international diversity. So there are people who are rooting for all 32 sides with a passion across this great metropolitan sprawl that is Southern California. However, having said that, let me check myself. There is one team with more support than any other, not USA, but Mexico. And Mexico has the privilege and perhaps the dread of opening up against the host nation tomorrow, as everyone in the world knows. First, where will you watch the match? And what do you think about that game on the field?
Yeah, well, I'm getting up early for that one, as I think football fans are on the West Coast in general. I will be watching it in the fine city of Linwood, which I've never been to, but they have a wonderfully Latino/Mexican-themed downtown. They're going to have an open-air viewing party. They're going to have free food, free giveaways. So I'm donning my Chivas USA jersey. I don't have a Mexican national team jersey for the occasion, but I do have a Chivas jersey, so I'm donning that, and I'm hanging out there in the morning. It should be an incredible experience.
Well, of course, there is the fact that we are in the part of the world where the most popular team is the Mexican national team that's in this World Cup, Mexico, and then into the southwestern, the United States of America. That is certainly the case. But for the rest of the world, we are the people rooting for this team, Mexico. They're on the dark side. The whole world, of course, wants to see South Africa win. They want to see this stadium just get lifted up into the stratosphere by a victory by Bafana Bafana. Doesn't pull at the heartstrings at all for you?
It's not going to happen. I understand that the World Cup is a very important socioeconomic event for South Africa, both domestically and internationally. I certainly hope that the exposure to this tournament really helps bring that very fractured country together. On the field, I don't think it's going to be such a positive experience. Mexico has regrouped from the disastrous reign of Sven-Goran Eriksson. They have a very exciting young prospect up front in Javier Hernandez Chicharito, who plays with Chivas in Guadalajara, one of the most popular teams in that country. And I really think Mexico are on a roll. South Africa themselves, well, their best player of the last few years, Benny McCarthy, was not picked for the squad. And they are going to have a very hard time staying with Mexico, I think.
Yeah, no, Steven Pienaar plays for Everton. Seems like their strongest player with McCarthy out of the side. As far as I know, he's the one player of really high world-class quality on the side. And Mexico has a number of players of great skill. And Carlos Vela, who plays for Arsenal in London, seems like he should be able to work the South African defense quite effectively along with Javier Hernandez.
Absolutely. I mean, you're right. Steven Pienaar and we Galaxy fans out here on the West Coast saw a lot of him when Landon Donovan was his teammate with Everton this past season. And he's very, very impressive. But, yeah, you're right. Thin on the ground. Questionable defense. You really have to think that South Africa, unfortunately, could not even get out of the group, which is unusual for a host nation. They really are one of the weakest host nations, period, on the field. And I just hope that it's off the field is more important for them, and that's where they get their satisfaction.
One final question, and I asked our Mexico experts this as well. Okay, the Mexico team, we all know in soccer that there's a home field advantage. The Mexico team has to have a solid internal constitution, all the players out there, because tomorrow's game, it is, for South Africa, a home field advantage, to use one of the more popular sports culture cliches of the past decade. It is a home advantage on steroids, a triple dose of steroids. Do you think that they may be a little shaky due to that?
Well, that's a good question. Mexico, as most fans know, do not travel well. They've only reached the quarterfinals of the World Cup twice, and both, not so coincidentally, occurred in Mexico back in 1970 and 1986. So Mexico has traditionally had trouble traveling. Some critics attribute that to the rather insular nature of their domestic football. But you're seeing more Mexicans go overseas now. You're seeing a very different mindset from Mexico than we saw under Ericsson, thanks to Javier Aguirre. And, of course, Blanco, he was discarded by Ericsson. He's back under Aguirre. Aguirre has really instilled a sense of self-belief in this team, and they have a nice blend of experience and youth. And because Mexico is not playing in Europe, playing in South Africa, where the altitude really might help them. I'm feeling better about Mexico's chances in this particular tournament than I have for quite a few years.
Now on to Uruguay and France, the other match that's taking place tomorrow. Not many people here in Southern California, with the focus on the opening match with Mexico playing it, have paid a lot of attention to this match. The other two teams in Group A, Uruguay is a little bit of a paradox this time. Usually they're viewed as a defensive side. They have a fantastic striking force on this club and are apparently vulnerable in the middle and the back. France, of course, one of the higher profile sides in recent World Cups. They won, then they bombed in 2002, and then they almost won in 2006. This team, it's floating a little bit beneath the radar screen, but still are the prohibitive favorites in Group A. What do you make of the second match tomorrow, Uruguay and France?
Mediocrity meets mediocrity, really. Both these nations struggled to get through their qualifying groups. They both had to go through playoffs to get to the World Cup. And as you pointed out, there are some problems with both teams. France, of course, no longer has Zinedine Zidane that they had 4 years ago. Thierry Henry comes off the bench these days. He's lost some pace. They do have the incomparable Nicolas Anelka, who plays in England. But, yeah, again, France is so up and down, you just never know which French team will show up. And, of course, they've got most of the sentiments of Europe, if not the rest of the world, against them anyway, after the hand of Gaul goal against Ireland in that playoff by Thierry Henry that some saw as a blatant cheating. So little Uruguay, less than 4 million people, twice winners of the World Cup, 1930 and 1950. It's not going to happen again. But, yeah, as you pointed out, they do have an exceptional strike force. Diego Forlan, ex of Manchester United, and now playing in Spain, if I recall correctly, with Atletico Madrid, combined with a very good up-and-coming young striker, Luis Suarez, who plays in Holland with Ajax. They will certainly be testing the French defense, you would hope.
Well, the way I look at the match, too, is these two guys, if they can somehow get any kind of service from midfield, it should be exciting to watch. Suarez poured in, I think, 47 goals this past year. Forlan won the Europa League with Atletico Madrid, scoring both goals in the finals. He did that with not a lot of opportunities. So he's a resourceful veteran striker. It's a very interesting pair. But really, I actually think France, I do see them being a little stronger than expected. I do think, like Argentina, they have the potential, if they get behind, to fall into a very sulky mode. Ribery at midfield should be able to keep Uruguay from getting any decent amount of midfield play. And again, he can be a very, very exciting player to watch as he runs at opposing defenses and distributes the ball. So I am expecting France to take that match, and I'm hoping that I'm wrong because I do like the Uruguayan tradition in the side. It should be brilliant fun, and I couldn't be more excited. And Nick Green, blogger, 100% soccer, check it out on the internet. Thank you so much for joining us here on The People's Game.
Always my pleasure, Alan. Thank you.
And that is our show for today. And tomorrow starts the World Cup. Let the games begin. Yeah, la, la, yeah, la, 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 la.